The brothers whisp.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Whisp. Let's take a ride through.
Hey everybody, this is Greg Talks number 7. Today I have one James Bardine with me. This is the part where you
How's
say
it going?
There you go.
I'm sorry.
Get your stuff together, bud. So for all of you that don't know, this is a podcast companion to the Brothers Whisp with mostly just my thoughts from the week. So this is a very informal mix of technical and non-technical material. So if that's not your bag, I won't fault you. So let's pop in. I'm going to kind of move around the list. Some of the stuff I had at the top doesn't really feel like starter material. So this weekend? Yeah, on Sunday, I officiated a wedding. And so in here in the notes, I had a link, or rather just a note in here that says, what are words of wisdom you would impart in a wedding speech if you were to give one? What do you think you would throw out there?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah, you. First thing that pops in your head, what do you got?
Communicate.
I think it's a
communicate.
Good one.
No, I mean, and I'm not just talking like, hey, my day was great. I'm talking like communicate your feelings in a moment. Because let me tell you, I'm 41, and for the first 38 and a half years of my life, I didn't know what communicating my feelings was. And so, yeah, always be able to say, hey, I feel this when you say that, and work on establishing an environment in which you both can say that safely without like, hey, how I feel is how I feel. And like not getting defensive is like the big thing.
Gotcha. And that's such a great point. And it's, to me, it's also not just communicate when you're upset about something, but when you're really happy about something, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Cause that I think well, we, I mean, you've got to say, hey, so hey that to... makes me feel loved, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Cause it's like, you know, don't just tell people when you're mad at them about, so you know what I mean? It's like, it gets to where when my phone rings, yeah. I cringe because nobody ever calls me to say, hey, how you doing, bud? You know, they only call me when something's busted. So, you know, it's the same thing with any relationship you have with somebody. If you're only giving,
yeah.
you know, constructive criticism or negative feedback, yeah. you know, they're probably going to be a little bit less receptive when you're saying, hey, can I talk to you about something? I think that's so great.
Yeah. Well, and I loved how you snuck in there that passive aggressive comment, how I don't call you often enough. So I'll be sure to call you. I'll be sure to call you more often and ask you how you're doing.
No, dude, I legit cringe when I hear my phone ring. You know, after being on call for so long, it's just it's a learned. It's just like Pavlov's dog, I guess. Only you know, it's somebody calling yeah. to whip me instead of give me a treat. So it's an unfortunate learned response I have. At some point in the future, I'm gonna work myself out of that. Maybe I'll just get rid of my phone. Maybe that's the simplest solution. I seriously doubt
well,
it. No,
yeah. Well, because the problem is, yeah, you're in the position where, yeah, you're permanently on call. There's no substitute for Greg where you're at. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no. In that kind of scenario, crap rolls uphill, unfortunately, always. And like where I'm at, I'm still on call. Technically, I'm in a rotation, but we've got everything buttoned down. That so like, it doesn't. I don't ever get called.
That's awesome. So you're really just rubbing it in at this point. So first you don't call me, and now you never
get. No, I never get called. Actually, no. The part where I start rubbing it in is I get a quarterly bonus depending on the percentage of on-call time I've had. So. Huh. I actually get paid extra to be on call.
That's good. I it's most of the places I've ever worked, there's been an incentive for being on call. So like even at UCS, which is notoriously not the greatest place, if you were on call that week, you would only really come in on Friday long enough to hand off the pager to the next guy, make sure everything was cleaned up, and then you'd leave for the day. So
gotcha.
To me, that was like that was pretty cool, you know? So like I would... you know, I'd go see a movie or something, you know, or I'd fart around or, you know what I mean? It's just got a whole day.
Oh,
to
yeah,
do
no,
something.
Totally.
So it's pretty cool.
That is pretty awesome.
Yeah. But speaking of the wedding, we did it at the new what was it? It was like third floor cantina, you know, in downtown Bryan. They've redone to be kind of like this 1920s themed sort of speakeasy bar. It was really nice in there. It was really cool. Really good venue.
Very cool.
And
I thought it was like a theater company for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was, but it's not anymore. It's actually really really nice little bar in there if that's your bag. It was really cool.
It's back to being a bar.
It was really
cool. Return to its roots.
Yeah, for sure. Well, they still maintained the stage, so you know the wedding was up there or whatever. And this was technically the first one they've done in there, because I guess it's just recently been revamped. But it was really nice. And
cool.
It was a hot mess going into it, but everything got pulled together and it went off seemingly without a hitch. You know what is so interesting? This was my third wedding to officiate, and I found that I love it. I love getting up in front of people, and I don't know, there's something about, yeah, like me saying words out of my mouth, and I can evoke emotion in other people, right? So I saw some people crying. I got a lot of good laughs, which is what I was really shooting for. They were actually laughing at my jokes. You know, it's the best joke was accidental. Which was kind of a bummer, but my face did not give it away. So, you know, it was a same-sex couple that I was marrying. And at the very end, I said, I'm so proud to present to you Mr. and Mrs. And as soon as I said Miss, because I was almost at the end, you know, I could see the finish line, and I just went on autopilot.
Yep.
And I said that, it just slipped right out of my mouth, and everybody just died laughing. And I just rolled right with it, and I was like, oh, man, I'm so clever, huh, guys? Yeah, it was awesome. So rolled right through it. But it's so funny because we were talking, I don't know, maybe a couple of times ago when we were playing D&D that, you know, some people get energized when they're in front of crowds. And at the end of that, I felt so juiced, you know, and it's so funny that when I kind of put on that suit, I was talking to Christy that, you know, whenever you go to different scenarios, you kind of put on this uniform and you're gonna, you know, like cops put on their uniform to become cops, you know. And so I kind of think of it mentally too, that whenever I'm in different scenarios, I sort of put on the suit, and when I'm wearing that suit, it just juices me up, and I love it, man. It's such a cool feeling, and it's so odd, you know. I mean, juxtapose that Greg versus the one you met 13 years ago or whatever, you know what I mean? That's so different.
Yeah.
Like night and day.
Sure.
Like even 5 years ago, this would have been the most terrifying thing in the world. But I don't know. I don't know what.
Well, it's all those data center tours you've had to give, dude. It really like primes the pump as far as public speaking and being able to throw some comedy in there, but also, you know, being serious and professional.
100% agree. You know, that I think that was one of the catalysts. Forcing myself to do the presentations at the Mums was a catalyst. The LinkedIn Learning stuff definitely. Was really good about pacing and, you know, just using your voice and being present in what you're saying and things. You know, it's just so many things kind of coming together played a role in that. And it's just so strange to see, I don't know, just to step back away from myself and look at how different I am now than just even a few years ago, just how much a person can change. And it's really encouraging. You know, to think as broken a human I can see real
everybody's
change.
Oh, shut up, you're not broken, it's so ridiculous.
We all are in some way or another, you know.
Oh absolutely. And but yeah you're calling yourself out in some sort of self-deprecating nonsense.
No. I think everybody's got things about them that they would like to change, and you know, just crippling fear of public speaking was one of mine, and now I actually am energized by it. Having said that, it was like I got home, and at 9:30, I was like, I'm going to bed, dude. It sucked all the life out of me from being like on for so long, but still love it.
Well, I do the same thing. I get the same thing when I go run a LARP weekend, man. I hate doing it, but I also love doing it. Like, I hate planning and writing down an outline and coordinating an event, but then, like, man, get me out there and I'm playing a character for a weekend. I'll go 48 hours with barely eating anything, barely sleeping, and you know, I don't stop. And it's the same thing. Then I'm dead on Sunday.
What do you think it is that? So LARP is live action role play, right? Where you're out in the woods and you're being a character and you're doing all that stuff. What do you think it is that whenever you slip into that character, what do you think it is that it energizes you so much from it?
For me, it's very much you're feeding off the response of the audience, and that's so every time you for you at your wedding, every time you got a laugh, you're that's like throwing another shovel of coal in the boiler.
Of gasoline.
Yeah.
And for you, it's the same thing. Like, but because I mean, like when you're, I don't know, I guess they're both actually kind of similar situations. Cause when you're at a LARP, you're in that character and you're fully committing, and those people standing across from you, they are fully committing too. Right. So if whoever you say you are, they 100% believe that you're that person, and they're all on board, right?
And you know, you're evoking emotions. You're doing comedy, and for me, it's that juxtaposition of high fantasy with anachronistic sharp wit. You know, making puns that reference 21st century comedy, but also. I'm playing on medieval words, and I don't know. I can't give you a good example because I suck at improv under pressure. But
No. I've seen you because it's very much in the moment. So you are 100% on your feet, and you know you might be going one direction with your story arc, and then somebody will do something, and you have to react to it, and you've got to pivot 180 degrees in less than a second, right? And so I mean, it's just, it's such a challenge and such a puzzle, and you're just,
I love that.
Kind of flowing with it.
And
I've seen
especially
you in your
when
element
working
doing that stuff,
collaborative
it's
effort.
Amazing.
Well, you got a really good feel for it when you and I worked together. We weren't LARPing at work, but like, you know, I feed off of the other creative genius in the room. So I've ad-libbed an entire weekend. You know, 30 players come show up, and I've got two moments I've written. Like, there's these two encounters where I've got a rough idea of what monologue and what information I want to get out there, but everything else that's going to happen this weekend, I didn't plan it because I hate planning things. And so, I ended up, one of them was a completely ad-libbed 10-minute monologue from a necromancer. He's leading this necromantic cult, but they're secret necromancers, right? But it was also it was a play on a pyramid scheme. So they were like, we found the cure. You never have to die. You never have to die again. You know, the end of all sickness, the end of death. And we called it Life Extends. And it was just selling alchemical substances and magic to make sure that you and your loved ones never have to die. And I did this 10-minute monologue in the style of like a Southern Baptist preacher, trying to get everybody to join my pyramid scheme. It was a lot of fun.
That's ridiculous. You know, I was thinking about
and
it.
I came out of it and I couldn't remember anything I'd said.
You go into like a fugue state, right? And then you come out and then, it was great or it was okay, but it's never bad somehow. You know, I was thinking about it, you know, when you have kind of a rough outline, but you ad lib stuff where you're on the spot and you're creating live, it's almost like Christmas morning as a kid. You know, there's presents, you just don't know what they are yet. And you get to kind of, you know, surprisingly hurry in there and unwrap them and, you know, and kind of enjoy that, that mystery that lays in front of you. And I think maybe that's kind of it too, right? Just the surprise of, you don't know where it's going. And then knowing that no matter what happens or what comes at you, you're going to kick its ass. You know, you're going to somehow overcome this thing. I think
it's great.
So fun.
It's great. You're solving a mystery along with the players and like, but you're doling out consequences, whether they're good or bad. You are deciding the consequences of other people's actions, and it's so much fun because you go to backstage, you know, it's not, there's not really a stage, but you go back to where all the other people who are running the event with, and you sort of go, okay, so they chose this, and you go, all right, well, what if this happens next? And then the next person will go, oh, but wait a minute, that totally ties in with this other thing over here, and oh my gosh, and all of a sudden, like, everything ties together in this magical little bow. It happens every time for me. I don't know whether I just have a really good group of people I play with, or I'm just amazing, but it happens every time.
Can you ever imagined being able to take that kind of joy and surprise and excitement and apply it to other parts of your life? Like, if there was a way to do it, have you ever thought about that? And maybe where you would sort of, like, I don't even know, like, this public speaking thing that I enjoy so much. I don't know how, like, you could do it occupationally, right? So, like you said, giving tours and stuff like that. To this day, I've done it 100 times, but I still enjoy giving tours, right, occupationally. I don't know how I could start a cult, I guess, in my personal life. I don't know how else I could inject that sort of thing.
Well, you just, you know, if you're going to stick around here in town here locally, you just find something to tour, right? And you end up just being one of those 50-year-old people, like the people over in Memphis or New Orleans, yeah, that just like, I'm going to give you a tour of this one thing and talk to you about this one stupid thing that happened in 1997, you know? Old John Winklesmith stabbed a hooker on this corner down in downtown Bryan, and that's why this bar is called Winklestabs. I don't know, whatever.
And every year in his honor, they do a parade with interesting floats. But no, Winklestabs. All right,
I don't know. Podcasts are not my element. That's why I don't have my own podcast.
No. This is definitely it. That's what I want. Everybody wants to hear the Winklestabs, bud. That's what they're here for. you know, it's like, I don't know, man. I just like, what is my phone doing? Let me move that thing. It's exploding. I just like the idea of I get energized from talking to young folks too. You know, not that I'm like ancient, I'm 38 at this point, but I feel like I've matured a lot. Hey, there he is. Kind of like emotional maturity, a lot over the last few years. And I like talking to young folks and just kind of, imparting some advice. You know, I never tell people what to do. I just tell people what I've done in the past in various situations. Right?
Exactly.
And let them draw their own conclusions from that. But it's, I don't know, man. It's just when I get an opportunity to do that, I feel that same energy. Like it energizes me to think that I'm helping other people. I guess I've always sort of had that in one form or fashion. But I don't know. I've just kind of brushed into folks and listened to them, and then really listen, you know, trying to be present and hear what they have to say and give back something I can. And I have this uncanny ability in some situations to ask people the most inappropriate questions, and generally they will answer you despite whatever that question was.
You can catch them by surprise. You know, it's a similar concept to embedding one or two lies within a whole bunch of truth. You ask a bunch of real questions, and then in the middle of that conversation, you ask the most ridiculous thing you could possibly could.
Can I borrow $50?
No.
Absolutely. good times. All right. So something else that's on my mind is I'm going to be having to hire somebody fairly soon. I kind of put the fairly soon and hire together there accidentally. And I was thinking, you know, if you're looking at resumes, what do you think impresses you the most on someone's resume? Like you're reading through,
man.
It. I mean, I guess it really a lot of times probably depends on what industry you're in and what kind of position you're hiring for. But I was thinking, could you imagine one thing that stands out? Look at your resume. What do you think the most impressive part of your resume is?
Man, this guy's old. No, man, I don't know. Like I don't particularly find my resume that outstanding. And the times that I have had to go through and look at resumes, it was for entry level positions. And so it was very difficult to find anybody that stands out. You know, like I've got some college or no college, and I've got some technical experience or none, and it's, you're sort of, man, you might as well put them on the wall and throw a dart.
I know. It's freaking awful, isn't it?
It's garbage. I would, if someone gives me a creative resume, like my brother Alex is in marketing, and one of the times he was out doing job hunting with resumes, he actually created his resume looked like a tabletop role-playing game character sheet with stats and stuff like that.
That's cool.
Highlighting his skills and stuff like that. And that looked amazing because, again, and it ties in with what he was doing. He's marketing himself. That's the right. whole thing you're doing when you're trying to get a job. It was a really, really cool concept. If someone did that, I would probably, honestly, it's, you know, bright colors is the only thing I could say, you know, something to make yourself stand out that isn't, you know, A, a glitter bomb, or B, you know, scented with perfume. Like, don't send me a resume like that. But like, anything that helps you stand out, I'll be like, yeah, you know what? I'll meet this person.
Yeah. You know, I was trying to think, like, I am at such a loss of what would impress me on a resume and what on. So you're thinking about this. I started looking at my resume. It's like, what would anybody find impressive? And all of it seems so mundane to me. You know what I mean? It's just, maybe it's because, you know, we are the wizard and the Wizard of Oz, and we know what's really behind the curtain. All right. Maybe to everybody else, it just looks like, you know, the Emerald Palace and just amazing. But to us, knowing, right. you know, what's behind the curtain, just it seems so less impressive. So I don't know, you know, maybe your resume actually is punched up more than you think it is. It's just, you know, it's just
the one guy I ended up hiring for that temp work. He ended up like completely having blown smoke. And I was like, dude, you don't know. And he was terrible. And I was glad he was only like a temporary contract hire to do the one thing I wanted him to do.
Yeah.
He just barely got that done.
Yeah, it does seem like such a crapshoot on that stuff. And then, you know, it's like when you get somebody in there, even if you give them like 90-day period or whatever, you know, there's this certain amount of guilt associated with that. Like, if I have to let this guy go or whatever. Or imagine, same scenario, but this guy had to relocate, you know, to get this job. You know?
Right, right.
Oh, man, you'd feel pretty bad about it. But I guess if it's, you know, a higher-level position, hopefully there's some additional screening stuff you can do and things like that.
Yeah, well, for higher level, you know, again, it's not necessarily the resume that gets them it's the interview, and in our field, it's more of a technical interview. If you've got someone who can actually quick fire scenarios from the hip and say, all right, solve this problem, and if they can actually discuss it with you with relative ease, then I think you're good, because that means they've got enough time under their belt that they don't have to Google every step.
Yeah. Well, if it's like, you know, they could like pseudo code it, you know, even if,
right, right.
even if they don't have the precise commands, right. Just the idea that they know all that right. stuff. You know, what would be interesting is for somebody in the technical field who's been in there for a while is to give them a troubleshooting scenario, even if it's not necessarily technical, just to see the approach they take. Cause that sure. to me, that's one of the biggest indicators of I have experience is somebody who can logically troubleshoot an issue.
Yeah.
It feels like that's the one thing nobody walks in the door with, right?
Or the ability to navigate the phone call. That actually just that brings to mind the time I want to say there was a round of hiring that Jacob did for customer service where he actually called them and pretended to be it was planned ahead of time, but he actually called and pretended to be a customer complaining about internet service being out, and would complain through an actual scenario he'd encountered to see how they'd handle it. They all failed miserably,
yeah,
but
yeah.
it was an interesting, it was interesting to watch him go through that method.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. It seems like a solid one. I'd be curious to see how I don't know, man, the older I get, the more I want to test myself against stuff. So I'd be curious to see how I would do in you know, like an interview scenario or whatever. Or you know what I was thinking the other day is, could I go and take the GED test and pass it? Like right now. With no, you know, like with no practice. Like, I don't know. Do you think you would pass a GED? A GED. rather.
I'd like to think I would.
Right? I don't know. Think maybe the math would get you somehow.
Maybe. I would. Golly, that would suck, wouldn't it?
I don't know. I have no idea what's on there.
What if high school was something we had to recert on?
That'd be terrible. God, what a depressing.
Not necessarily like the miserable awkwardness of it, but just the scholastic.
Yeah. Portions. Well, you know, I mean, I think everybody, once they get later in life, they look at their kids and think, God, if life was only that simple, if I just had to go to school and do this bare minimum amount of stuff and then do whatever the hell I want with no repercussions, you know, right. that's a dream, right? It's less responsibility. Mm-hmm. That'd be pretty nice.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
I'd love it.
Yeah, I would too. All right, man. So I know you used to, I don't know if you still, do you watch Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
I have, I petered out somewhere in the middle there. I stopped. It's not that I didn't like it. I started doing other things.
Yeah. So I just binge watched season 13. It's not that long.
Oh my gosh.
And I was thinking, one, it's insane that they've been doing this for 13 years.
Yeah.
And the episodes are still quality. There was maybe one dud in there. Man, I don't know. There was one where Charlie was really getting tortured. And that was that one's kind of hard for me. But everything else was just, yeah. It was just like, how do you maintain that kind of creative quality over that many seasons? And yeah. I mean, just a little spoiler alert on it. The very last season had this extended interpretive dance scene, and it was beautiful. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
It was it's so weird to say it, but it was a beautiful scene. I just didn't expect it. Not like it wasn't funny, right? It was actually really, really kind of a touching scene. And I was just thinking, man, I can't imagine having that much creative energy for that long to keep it fresh. You know, I mean, it's got to be so difficult.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't imagine any other show that's been able to kind of maintain the same look and feel over that long. Like The Simpsons, what did they dip after 8 years or something?
Yeah. I mean, well, I guess, and I don't know, I'd have to go do some research to figure out how many of the original people are still in the writer's room. I think a lot of it is cycling new blood through there.
Yeah. New blood, but, new looks, but I guess it's probably like pulling in new writers, right, to get new, fresh perspectives, but still having enough of the right staff stay there to where you still have the same feel of the show and same look.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Community, after Dan's exodus, I still enjoyed the show, but it was very different. You knew.
It was an echo. There was something, it felt hollow, and it felt like a shadow of the previous three seasons. Yeah. And then when he came back for seasons 5 and 6, it was amazing again.
Yeah. And I've heard people say all kinds of various, I hated these and blah, 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 these episodes, but, I would never go that far with it because I thought the actors in there, you know, the characters, I thought they were still the characters I loved and they were still doing a great job and they're still killing it. It just felt a little different, you know? So maybe I didn't like it as much, but I would never go as far as to say I didn't like it. There are some episodes that are, you know, throw away, but.
Right. But that's with any show. I think they had such great momentum. And like you said, the characters were just so well done that I think what we felt, at least what I felt in season 4 was, it was sheer momentum from what Dan had built, and it just sort of catapulted. And you sort of, you know, that's why some of the episodes in season 4 were actually pretty decent, and then of them, hit or miss.
Yeah. And you know, it's like you can't completely crap on it because that would be a disservice to all the people working on the show that,
right?
You know, and all the writers putting their blood, sweat, and tears in there. Yeah, so it's it is what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, I actually do some technical stuff every now and then. Do you know that?
That's what I hear.
Yeah, so somebody was asking the other day about what I use for, like doing like remote relays and stuff, or like monitoring dry contacts and stuff. And I was going to give a plug for the control by web modules. We've been using those things forever. Like, I mean, we've used those things in access control for like remotely unlocking doors. I mean, that goes back to the old data center. We were using those things over there, like when we were still in the old NOC, bud. So
exactly,
we had those on there to remotely get into the doors, and then the guards could pop the doors as well. And what else are we using for? We use them for generators. So I've got one that's on one of the generators that monitors the block heater. So if the temperature drops below a certain level, it'll actually crank that joker just to keep it warm enough, you know, and then so it does all that stuff. And then
no more sleeping at the data center?
Just for the Aston Villa.
Oh.
But then there's, okay. So I could fire it from here if I wanted to. But then there's also the 120 genset. That module in there went out, and we had to like kind of rewire a little bit, the dry contact box coming off the generator, but that goes straight into a control by web thing. And those things are great, man, because you can SNMP pull those things. They can do syslogs. They can do Modbus. They can directly email if you want, right, depending on the module, and they're pretty inexpensive. They're like $120 per module, so it's awesome for
them. Yeah, no, those things are fantastic. Exactly. Yeah, for what you get, amazing.
Because they just work and work and work, and we've never had problems with them, which is, you can't say that about many things, is that they just work and work.
Mm. No doubt.
For sure. All right, back on to entertainment. So we recently went to the MSC, right? So A&M has this thing called the MSC. I have no idea what that stands for, but they bring through interesting stuff every now and then. And so they had this
Student Center.
Anyway. Oh, there you go. It was the play Where Everything Goes Wrong. Man, that was so enjoyable. I was, you know, what really caught me is that it's this interesting mixture of physical comedy, you know, where like people are getting hit and, you know, like Three Stooges type of stuff, but also very clever wordplay. And there was zero obscenities in there. And I haven't like watched anything comedic without obscenities in forever. And I was thinking, wow, you still can. You can still do it without... then later on making people unconscious and taking care of them, Bill Cosby style. He was the last clean comic I knew of.
Turns out he exercised those demons elsewhere.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. So if you're a comic,
don't curse on stage.
Yeah.
Just
feed people interesting sandwiches.
Yeah. Mm. Scratch that itch somehow.
Does this rag smell like chloroform to you?
Yeah. Speaking of comedy, yesterday or the day before was the anniversary. It would have been Mitch Hedberg's 52nd birthday.
Oh wow!
And Mitch Hedberg was amazing. I rewatched some of his clips on YouTube in memoriam, and golly, talk about funny plays on words! Just amazing.
And he had such a unique style and pacing.
Mm-hmm.
So different. Do you think his jokes were really that good, or do you think it was just that he was so different that really helped him?
Both. Because of his delivery style with the rapid punch with a quick punchline at the end, it takes you off guard because he did have this weird demeanor about him, and apparently he had just like crippling stage fright, which is why there's one set he did where his eyes are like closed most of the time while he's talking to the microphone, and most of the other times he's wearing sunglasses. But yeah, just random, because it is, I don't know the type of comedy where you just make random observation, I guess observational humor, combined with quick puns, and you're like, I love rice is great for when you're hungry and you want 1,000 of something. My delivery is not nearly as good as his, but
it's good.
It's just stuff like that. You're like, oh, yeah, God, that's really freaking hilarious.
So simple. So simple, but effective. I love it.
I had refried beans the other day. They're so good. Makes me want to just try fried beans because maybe those taste just as good, and we're wasting our time, or we're putting in too much effort or something like that.
Oh my gosh! So I, speaking of like media and stuff like that, I'll skip to the bottom here. I saw a video earlier today. It was this clip from New York City in 1911. I don't know what this film crew was doing, but they're like on a ferry, kind of, you know, like in the harbor, and then, you know, they're just like filming streets and stuff. And so it's this weird mix of Model T Fords and then horse-drawn carriages like weaving in between them. And I don't know, man, it's and they were like upscaled it to 4K and then kind of did some colorizing on it. And it's so weird. It's like almost like you can reach in there, like you could almost just step right into it and get a feel for it. I've kind of like in my past as a child, I've sort of dreamed about what it would be like to go back and try and experience a culture and a civilization, you know, at another time period. And I've always thought about like the turn of the century or, you know, like the 50s, just just kind of walk through some populated area and just see what it feels like. I don't know. I romanticize stuff like that in my head. I know it would be, you know, just stinky and gritty and dirty, just like any other city at any other point in time. But it just seems so fascinating, you know, because it's just, it's like, you know, maybe I would be relieved of some of the burdens I have now, but, you know, people still worried about stuff back then. You know, it was mostly just related to baseball and who was going to win, I guess.
It was very much, you know, if you're going back to turn of the century, it's like Oregon Trail. You know, you a lot of people just worried about dying of cholera.
You got to have 10 kids because, you know, seven of them are going to get the fever and die. Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't know, man. You know. That stuff's just so strange, so bizarre to think about. You know, and really, I mean, that's, you know, a lifetime ago. Well, you know, theoretically, if somebody lived 100 years, then, you know, they could have been here till 2011. So it's almost like, you know, it seems so long ago, but you could still touch it.
Yeah.
You know, I was musing over the other, something the other day, you know, because we were talking about our last summer trip. We went to D.C. and then so we went to the Flight Museum, and they actually have the Wright Brothers flyer in there. And, you know, thinking about the time from we had the very first manned air flight to the time we actually landed on the moon, that was within somebody's lifetime, somebody's span, you know. And that's just, it's so crazy to think about how fast we're progressing in technology. And so from there to there, does it feel like we're still making those leaps and bounds that fast? I guess that, I mean, that was what, like 50, 60 years or something in between the two.
I don't know. Like, yes and no. Like, we're doing more. I don't know. Like, the technology is getting smaller and faster, but I don't know that we're necessarily making massive inroads. You know what I mean? Like, from going from not flying to landing on another, you know, planet, you know, landing on the friggin' moon, like, that's a jump, man.
You know what I see?
And then you got iPhone 10 to iPhone 11, and, you know, all right, we got a better camera.
You know what it feels like? It feels like all of our technological advances these days, we're getting better at distracting ourselves or entertaining ourselves and not, I don't know, man, I just don't see like these amazing new things that like actually improve our lives, you know, like medical advances. I know they're happening, I just don't see them, right? You know, or I don't see new airplane type technology, you know, like a whole new thing that's just amazing and new and different coming out. I just see new ways for us to stare at a tiny screen.
And it's because the only money to, because it's all about money. The only money to be made in pharmaceuticals is boner pills, like not curing cancer. Like it's true. Or being like that douche nozzle that, you know, bought the patent of that one like
EpiPens and stuff or whatever.
Yeah, he bought and then like marked it up 1,000%.
It is what it is, I guess. I don't know. It just it feels like we're not moving so fast. I don't know, man.
It's because there's no money in innovation. That's why Hollywood is rebooting and putting everything it's ever done back in the meat grinder and spitting it back out, because there's no money to be made in risking good art. There's no money to be made in in innovating. Well, there's money to be made in innovating technology, but only in that it fuels what people want, which is to be entertained.
I mean, they want that respite from their life or whatever, right? And it seems like a
Yeah.
lot of people's lives have become their entertainment. Like, and I don't know if this is across the board, but I know a lot of the guys in the Knock, that's what they mostly subsist on. They come to work to make enough money to go home and play games and eat.
Yeah. And then like what they talk about is the game they play or the movie they had streaming in the background, listening to the audio of which, or on a second monitor while they played their game, like just everything to tune out the fact that, they're in their 30s making an hourly wage instead of trying to progress in life. It's like, nope, I found a comfortable spot in which I can just sort of,
Doesn't that feel kind of like self-medicating? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like almost like an alcoholic, you know, they numb the pain or whatever it is, you know, they numb the existence of the life that they don't want to be in or whatever. I don't know if
Well, I
it
mean, it's some of
becomes
it.
the point of
Some
their
of
life.
it's numbing, but some of it is that a lot of the and it goes towards video game design as well. It's all and all the little clickables and the microtransactions are for the tiny endorphin rush you get from winning. That's what loot crates were. The loot boxes were that EA, got just slammed for because it's all randomized. You never know what you're going to get. So it's a little, oh, you're gambling. You're gambling for something that, you pay a dollar to EA and you get a little loot crate and it could have one random item out of a 200 item list. Some of them are good, some of them are just, oh cool, I got a different t-shirt for my, avatar.
Well, I mean, I guess like in the 50s, that was kids getting like packs of baseball cards, right? I was like, you know, I can have like a Hank Aaron in this thing, or you know, I mean, you never knew. And I saw it's probably, I mean, nothing's new, right? We just invent new
And
versions
in the
of.
90s, it was chat roulette. No, I don't know. Or whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I could go down rabbit holes like that. Just that stuff fascinates me about the way we think and interact, especially with technology and just how everything is. I mean, it just feels so like because I look at my kids and it feels so different than when I was a kid playing with a Nintendo. Like I would, the games were sometimes so obtuse that you would just they would just I'm done with this. I'm out, you know, and then you'd go do whatever. But now, like with Steam, there is a quantifiably endless supply of options. You know, and then like with YouTube, you know, I mean, there's what, probably like for every hour in real time, there's probably millions of hours of content that's getting uploaded all the time. So it's you could never run out of stuff to entertain yourself with. And unfortunately,
It's funny.
I do the same thing sometimes. So.
This is funny. Steph was telling me the other day about a study she read, like why kids like scream and throw tantrums when they lose at a video game. And it's because it's because of the endorphin rush. It's because they've been promised something psychologically, and when they lose, they don't get that endorphin rush. And like, I just worked for 12 minutes to get this thing, and it got taken away from me. And like, they just, yeah. It's crazy.
Interesting.
The brain just freaks out and gets really mad.
Well, what's different about adulthood? We've just learned to cope with that.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, there's a lot of adults that play video games that still scream and throw tantrums
Oh,
like that.
yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I was about to say, hang on a
Well,
minute. There's a lot of people that are still like that.
I don't think that it necessarily changes in adulthood. I think. In the privacy of their own homes, I think some of those Knock guys throw tantrums and throw their headset at the wall when they lose.
It's not even
Or
privacy of your own home anymore. Now, like if you've ever been to a children's sporting event, those coaches are the least in control humans I have ever seen in my life. It is
that's yeah. Well,
insane.
impulse control is a scarcity in this day and age. That's why my kids aren't involved in sports. They're all book read. They all read books, and they all play musical instruments. And
Oh, man.
we are all nerds, and we embrace the weird. And they don't know that it's weird to get in a costume and go to the movie theater and watch a Star Wars film as a family.
So I'm going to give you a little bit of truth here, maybe a little too much for you, but like our kids, like we were never worried about being naked around them. You know, we just take baths, get in the shower, in and out. And our kids have become so accustomed to that that now they're like hitting puberty, and it's like, all right, you remember the rule, right? Don't be naked in the living room. And that's like, don't be naked over there. It's like, Jesus Christ. It's like they are just weight. You know what I mean? They're just, I love that they're super comfortable in their skin. But now I'm having to reinforce, like,
Cultural
common
norm. Like, yeah.
boundaries that they should have.
All right.
What happens if you
We're coming
sleep
up
and
quick
you're
on
naked in your
18 and when
room
you have an
and,
apartment. Yeah.
yeah, it's like, come on, bro. You can't do that. Pee goes inside the toilet, not down the side of it. So, just these kids are maniacs. They're animals. Two boys, they're animals. You grew up with four or three other brothers. You guys are
Yeah.
animals too. I know you were. I don't have to
We were.
hear
We
any of the
were.
horror stories. Oh, goodness. All right. So, going back to kind of that resume talk, let's bring this back
Yeah.
around to something else that's kind of interesting. Is
Full circle back to something useful.
yeah, I've well, I've got a guy who's leaving, and he really has been great for my mental health because he's been with me for 4 years now, and he can handle most everything. So, you're not the only one on the island. Well, that guy's getting ready to leave me. Unfortunately, he's super talented. That was the guy who was actually getting married. It was Lucas. So he got married, and
Yeah.
I got to meet his mom, believe it or not. And well, I mean, it makes sense that she'd be at his wedding. But
Right.
she had probably a 5-minute conversation with me that explained so much about him and his behavior. And I'm not going to get into all of it, but she said, "Did you know that he has a 159 IQ?" I was like, "Seriously?" Like I had no idea he never told me anything like that. I knew he did like math stuff, that he was kind of like good at it. And she was
Yeah.
like, "Yeah, he was number two in the state at one point." I was like, "Oh, okay." So I Google it really quick,
Oh.
and like above 135 is like genius level. So he's at 159, and he was
You
like,
haven't been working him hard enough. No, I'm
"No,
kidding.
that's what I'm saying."
I've had
He
so
was
many
like.
problems I could have had him solve.
And so I asked him about it. He's like, "Well, it's just a stupid test. It doesn't mean anything." I was like, "Okay." I mean, everybody in Mensa would probably disagree with you there, but and
Right.
I think the barrier to entry from Mensa is like 135. So yeah,
Yeah.
he could easy. Yeah, dude, I was like, it's just so crazy. Anyway, I digress. I kind of went down a rabbit hole, but we sat down with everybody, so on the engineering and then the ops team, and we said, "Hey, pretend like everybody in engineering is about to leave." I was like, "Pretend Lucas leaves and I get hit by a bus. What do you want documented?" So the idea is, even mundane stuff that we would normally take care of, or stuff that you would normally do, but then there was this one little piece that, or say
Right.
you get a call and you may not be super confident about this thing. So just document like everyone is gone. And so obviously the very Lucas-centric stuff, he's got a list to go through. He's not back from his honeymoon yet, but he will be shortly. He's going through that, and I gave the junior guy a lot of like diagrams and stuff. That's the kind of low-hanging fruit, like a new guy can do.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
then I'm doing some of the really annoying, like stuff like what are reoccurring bills that we have? What are all the telecom stuff? Most all that stuff I have it. It's just in disparate places, and so I'm just kind of making
Yeah.
a central document that says, "Hey, this is where all this stuff's at," or whatever, So it's, I don't know. I just thought it was a kind of an interesting concept. And Jacob, being Jacob, of course, gave me like a page and a half of stuff that he wants documented.
Right.
So, it's like I hate to do it because I know we're going to be bogged down for like 2 weeks doing this stuff. But it's important. When was the last
Yeah.
time you documented stuff like everyone was about to quit? Or is your stuff so proceduralized that you guys don't have to worry about it that much?
Oh, you don't. When I got there, documentation was not great because they didn't have a network guy. Like, they had a server guy who knew networking. So their network grew organically, and a lot of the interfaces didn't have descriptions, which, as you know, is one of my biggest pet peeves. If I can't like linearly, logically trace down the path of where this data is going, I'll get really mad. So I did a lot of documentation it's not like an ISP backbone. There's a firewall here, and that segregates this off, this little stuff over from here, and then that connects over here to this router, and then that's, you know, such a web. But yeah, I documented like there was no documentation. So it's sort of like documenting like everyone was about to leave. Thankfully, I haven't had to do any of that recently. It's all just sort of, it's done.
Thankfully. Yeah, but I mean, think of it like as an exercise. If it's something you did annually, like once a year,
right?
Theoretically, you would just be slight updates to some stuff. And I know,
but
you'd probably find chunks of things every year that you kind of, God, I hate documentation though, dude. I hate it. I don't mind it if I do it in line, like while I'm doing the task document. And usually I like to make diagrams before I do a thing because it's so much easier for me to think. But then, you know, break fix, or you're just going 100 miles an hour on a project, or somebody else is doing that project and they're less good at documentation. Oh, that stuff can pile up.
For us, documenting things that are getting put in is almost always done. Documenting when we've decommissioned things, I can tell you, has almost never gotten done. there are firewall rules for services here's the public IP in a service we're listening on, and the description is like, customer we haven't had for 6 years.
I totally get that. We have some abandoned stuff in place as well, just like that. All right, dude, believe it or not, we are
it's been an hour. I know.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So let's put a bow on it.
Documentation is key. That's what we'll name this episode.
Documentation.
Document.
How do you? Yeah. So if folks want to get a hold of you out online, I know last time we said they could add you on LinkedIn or whatever. Somebody said, hey, why don't you get him in the Slack? So if you want an open invitation, you can join the Little Brothers with Slack and get in there and interact for folks.
Dude, that'd be fun. I'd like that. I'd like to meet the rest of the brothers of the Wisps.
Yeah, there's I think close to 100 people in there or more now. So there'd be a lot of folks you could holler at. So possibly on the Little Brothers with Slack, people get a hold of you or find you on LinkedIn. Anything else? Or are you good there?
No, I don't have a Facebook. I don't have anything. I mean, you want my mailing address? I just sort of dox myself. If you want to talk to me and I haven't jumped on the Slack or anything, hit Greg. And I mean, I don't imagine anybody has anything they need from me, but
they might need to go down that LARP rabbit hole. You never know.
There you go. Yeah. God, I'd love to get it started up again here in the local area. I don't like having to drive like 4 hours to go do it.
Yeah, it's insanity. All right. Yeah. So if you want to find me, greg@gregshole.com, that's my email address. Gregshole.com is a website that I occasionally blog at, and I'm doing more, believe it or not. Also, brotherswisp.com, you can find us there, or patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. That gets you access to that patron-only Slack we talked about. And James will be there primed and ready to answer all of your LARP questions. So questions and comments, please keep them coming. James, thank you for spending a little time with us today. We will talk to you guys later.
Equipment and methodology, so sit back and start learning. Lighting up the tower so people can start searching. Shooting up the web in neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes, we're loud and annoying. But we're informative facts, we're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven. We'll be right back.